this time is precious. So I think we've made a commitment to really do as much of the things we want to do while we can, you know, make the best of it.
Hello, and welcome to season two of The Collective Mind. I'm really excited to be back with you as we've got a really special season of guests. No one understands this journey like you. Your stories light the way for others and are the strongest tool we have to raise the awareness necessary for a brighter future. Today's episode features two individuals who embody the resilience and strength that define our community. I'm joined by Chris and Mike, a couple whose approach to living with PSP has been built around making the most out of every day. From completing an 18-day pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago to successfully advocating for federal legislation in Congress, their story demonstrates that while these diseases bring undeniable challenges, they don't have to limit what's possible when you have determination, partnership, and the right support system. So if you could just maybe tell me a little bit about your journey, you know, with a diagnosis and how you learned about Cure PSP.
I was diagnosed in 2015 with Parkinson's.
2015, was it?
Yeah, 2015 with Parkinson's. I was 60 years old.
Yeah.
And I had symptoms for probably five or six years before that. And then in 2021, they changed diagnosis to PSP, which is pretty typical, I think.
Yeah.
The carbidopa levodopa wasn't working. And so they did some further observation and decided it was PSP in 2021. And then I started a support group with Margo, because that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, what was the support group like?
It's really good. It's every 2 weeks, or twice a month, I should say. Just people who have PSP. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I missed if I don't do it.
We attend together usually. They're welcoming for caregivers too, or care partners. So yeah, I've become really attached to a lot of the folks in the community. And Margo, yeah, we really like being part of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned obviously being diagnosed with Parkinson's initially, switching to PSP. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very, very common experience. How did like the information and support for Parkinson's compare to PSP? Like, what was it like finding resources?
I don't think I was looking for resources when I thought I had Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't need any.
Yeah.
By the time I was diagnosed with PSP, I was feeling pretty scared though. You know, when you read that typically people last 5 to 7 years with PSP, it's pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking for support.
Yeah.
And I found it.
In addition to the support group, have there been any types of resources or activities that have kind of helped you out throughout this?
I've done some webinars. I guess that's about it.
Also, well, I do also, there's a care partners support group once a month that I do on Tuesday evenings. And that's Janet Edmondson does that. I really, I get a lot out of that. Just learn a lot. Fortunately, Chris's PSP is, I've learned, is slower progressing than most people. And they say every PSP person's different, right? But it seems like Chris is slower progressing. So it kind of helps me think through and think about what's down the road, you know, as well as give support to other people. So that's been a real gift too from Cure PSP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we recently put on a neuro conference, Neuro 2024, and it was like a collection of a bunch of researchers. In the last year, I think we funded the most we ever have in research. And, you know, I was there watching all the presentations, and it's a lot to take in, and it's a lot of information, but it's definitely really interesting to see how it seems that it's more prevalent than people think. And as you said, it can vary a lot from person to person. No two people are the same. And they're, I feel like they're kind of at the surface of like all the different types of ways it can affect people. And
yeah, it's definitely something that that we don't know much about, and we're continuing to learn more. So,
and there's really no local support for PSP. So that's what's one thing that's so great. We sound like we're a testimonial here, but another thing so great about Cure PSP is you see how many people it affects, you know, in touch with this larger community. So, yeah, and so much learning that occurs through Cure PSP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how is your perspective on, you know, living with PSP change since, you know, you first learned about it, didn't really know anything about it to now? Like,
oh no, I worry more about it now because I'm getting worse. Mm-hmm. Starting to fall more than I used to. Wearing knee pads today, in fact. What do you think?
Well, I think the fear is right. I think, you know, the one thing that's on the, you know, what you notice is on the support groups that we've watched people, you know, we've watched the progression with people online, and Chris is starting to, and I said it's slower, but it's progressing a little slower, but still kind of, and who knows what's going to happen, but kind of looking forward, it might happen, you know, that is, it's sobering. Yeah.
Chris, I know you're a prolific runner. I want to ask you about that. What does running mean to you?
Well, I don't run anymore. I just walk now. I was running, but I've turned to just walking. I walk 3 miles today. Twice a week, I walk 3 miles with a friend of mine. And then I walk other times too. Let's see, I did a half marathon. The last half marathon I did was in May. Mm-hmm. That was a walking one. Last December.
Well, you ran like, I think about walk, you did a walk run for 8 miles and then.
Oh yeah.
Then you walked the, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You had some, you were feeling it in your hip and then you slowed
That's
down.
And
we
right.
we
That's
walked
right.
to finish it up.
That's yeah. right. But last December I did a trail run that was half marathon, a run walk, and I did really well on that one.
Yeah, it's amazing. Something about running, and I we'll see if you can get back to it or not, but something about running and Chris that, you know, she doesn't really fall as much as she does just in her regular life in the kitchen or whatever, you know, that I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it, you know, she doesn't, I mean, on a trail run, you, one of the things you do is you fall with it and you're on leaves and it's December and, you know, you're in the mountains in West Virginia. So, but it's just amazing. And I watched Chris like go down this really rough trail and kind of trip a little, but then dance down it like she was a dancer, you know, and stayed on her feet. I don't think I could have done that. So it's quite remarkable. I don't know how or why, but it works for Chris. And it's just, you know, that's been awesome. Chris, you do a lot of bike riding too, don't you?
Yeah, I do. That's true.
That's great. How do you think it's affected kind of your PSP?
I think it's made it slower progressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. We did, just a year ago, this was a big deal, I think, in so many ways, but we trained and then walked part of the Camino de Santiago in Europe, which is a pilgrimage route. Become quite popular, and there's different routes. The most famous one starts in France and crosses the Pyrenees down through Spain to Santiago de Compostela, where the shrine, the basilica is. But we did the Portuguese coast, which was just gorgeous. We started north of Porto, and you tell them about it.
Walked 118 miles in 10 days. It was amazing. Wow. It was beautiful, and I did really well. I don't think I fell at all on the trail.
Wow.
Nope, not at all. It was a struggle. I mean, it was hard for me, and I'm fairly healthy. I'm old, but I'm fairly healthy. But Chris did really well. We did at one point, you were starting to lean a lot. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. About halfway through.
Leaning to my right and I couldn't straighten up.
Yeah. And that was worrisome. And we had Chris took a day off and took the train to the next town. I walked. We had a hard time deciding how do we manage this, but Chris was able to do that, you know, navigate the train station, everything fine. And what we found out through Facebook, is one of Chris's trainers who she worked with years ago and now is working with again, said you need to get electrolytes on board. This is very common. People with Parkinson's-like diseases, hydration and super important. So we found some I don't know why we didn't think of this, but we found some electrolytes and it's just like that was the cure. Cause we were having a few hot days, you know, and sweating a lot. And, but that seemed to be the magic, solution.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was in the summer.
It was in September, late September, early October.
Yeah.
Got it.
It was warm though.
That's really amazing.
Spain.
Wow.
So, we trained almost 8 months, you know, we'd walk progressively more miles each week. We got a training plan and, gosh, I don't know how many miles we walked in training and with the Camino, but I think all that physical activity really helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a literal pilgrimage. That's it's kind of blowing my mind. How did it feel to complete that?
How did it feel to complete?
Oh, it felt great.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe I did it. Wow. I was really proud of myself.
Yeah, it was almost brought tears. I did bring tears to our eyes when we finally got there, because it's, you know, Chris worked so hard to do it all, and not just the pilgrimage itself, but all the training. And so to finish up, and it's just this square in Santiago de Compostela, this beautiful town, this cathedral, and you see all these other pilgrims, you know, peregrinos, they call them, you know, just leaning back on their backpack and celebrating. And it's just, it's just really moving, very moving to see, you know, to see all the people and what they've done. And, to have walked this route that, you know, millions of people over the generations have walked before. Yeah.
We took the easy way. We had a company move our suitcase from hotel to hotel.
Yeah.
We weren't carrying stuff on our back and staying in hostels.
Thank God. Like that. I wanted to be, you know, carrying a backpack and all that. And Chris was than me. She said, no way.
No, you know,
so we, it was great to arrive to, suitcase full of nice clean clothes and shower and, you know,
yeah,
not have to carry all that
or stay in hostels.
Yeah, it was, I miss it, you know, part of me would like to go back, you know, I don't know if we ever will, but it was really something.
It was.
Yeah. What were you thinking about, you know, during it? Like what were your emotions as over the course of the 10 days?
Oh gosh. Thought a lot about my PSP. Thought a lot about how I was doing. I don't know, I can't remember much.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know I was feeling, I went through a range of feelings. I mean, it was hard, so sometimes it was a struggle, and so there'd be just kind of hard. And frustrating. It was beautiful though in places.
It was really beautiful.
I think we were both just in awe of the beauty of the coast of Portugal.
In the woods, it smelled like eucalyptus.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Eucalyptus forests and so the crashing of the North Atlantic. I know for sure I felt so much pride in Chris, you know, and when we finished. And just kind of my heart was just full, you know, of gratitude that she'd been able to do it. So certainly gratitude. Yeah.
Yeah. How long had you been thinking about doing it, or when did you, you know, first hear about it?
Was your idea originally?
Yeah, I think we had always wanted to visit Portugal. I don't know, you know, for just the longest time. I think, and I had, over the last several years, just knew people that had gone and done the Camino, you know, and it just seemed like, that sounds really like a great adventure. And so somebody from church was going and invited me, and I was, you know, it wasn't, the timing wasn't right. But as I talked with Chris, we started saying, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we, you know? And so we figured it out. And boy, I'm glad we did. You know, one of the things this makes me think of, so aware that, you know, this time is precious, where, you know, Chris is still fairly functional, and we, you know, and we have the resources and the abilities. So I think we've made a commitment to really, you know, do as much of the things we want to do while we can, you know, make the best of it. And that's certainly travel is one of those things, not the only thing, but, you know, doing that, we hope to do more. And I think in a way I know that's a good thing, but I think that's also good to have goals and for your PSP, don't you?
Yeah, look forward to something. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, just the various situations that so many people are in. And yeah, it's really beautiful to hear that you're able to, you know, do things like this, because I agree that it sounds so important and like so fulfilling. Yeah. Do you have any strategies for managing, you know, obviously symptoms are unpredictable. Like how do you manage your symptoms while staying active? You know,
I take Ritalin twice a day.
Yeah.
I was told by someone, my neurologist's office, that Ritalin had been shown to help. Let's see. How else I manage my symptoms? Try to get enough sleep at night. I wear knee pads. I'm wearing knee pads today because I'm falling a lot on my knees lately.
Physical therapy,
yeah, that's right. I do physical therapy. I had about 20 weeks, I guess, of physical therapy this year. And continued at home, which is really good.
We have a great, in Cincinnati, we have this place called the UC, it's called the UC Neuroscience Center, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's part of like the university teaching hospital, but they have a center for neuroscience. So they have a great neurology department, like a movement disorders clinic. So a great neurologist, and we just found the best physical therapist who knows a lot about PSP and has given you strategy. You know, Chris works on strategies to unfreeze your feet, you know, because that's a problem with feet sticking. So like, for example,
four S's.
What's that? Yeah.
The four S's.
You tell me.
I practice the four S's. It's stop, stand, sway, and step. So you stop what you're doing, just stand for a couple seconds, and then sway. Just move your body back and forth, and then step. And that helps a lot.
It's hard to remember all the time because you know, Chris is just doing something in the kitchen and move towards the fridge and might forget. And on a good day, that's not a problem. On a not so good day, you know, she might take a spill. But when she can stop and remember that, and I think it's hard, it's like magic, you know, the feet don't stick and she moves quite fluidly. It's the darndest thing, this PSP, you know, like the feet sticking, it just seems to occur randomly, like every now and then. There's no predicting, is there?
Yeah. Some days are better than others, though.
Some days are better than others, yeah.
Had a few bad days lately. Mm-hmm. So I really had to practice it a lot.
So yeah, sometimes a bad day, quote unquote, is like Chris will say, I'm just not feeling as stable today. And it's really good that you just sense that, because then we can adapt. I can pick up more slack, you know, do more. And then if Chris is having, I've had to learn this as a caregiver. There was a time I was just trying to do everything because, you know, to kind of protect, feeling protective. Like I don't want her to fall. And, I should be doing this. And what I learned is, and with Chris's help, is that she didn't always appreciate that, you know, like I'm sort of taking jobs away from her that she wants to do. And so I've adapted. And of course, you know, like who wants their functions and their abilities taken away from them? I don't think anybody does. At least Chris doesn't. So, try and discern now when's a good day. And so Chris may be able to, you know, do the laundry and do some cooking and that kind of thing. And other days, maybe kind of lay off, you know, this is a day when I can pick. So that's been a learning, hasn't it? Yeah. And it's been a real lesson for me and like really paying attention, not always doing it the same way every day.
You're so helpful though.
Well, thank you. Try to be.
He really is. He drives me everywhere. I'm not driving anymore. So he drives me everywhere. I have to go. He does most of the cooking, the cleaning. He's just a huge help to me.
Yeah, I was going to keep working, you know, part-time, but decided a couple years ago to retire because it just felt like the right thing to do. I just, you know, completely retire. Just given the, hey, Alice, just for those listening, guys aren't watching this, we have a golden retriever that's really getting obnoxiously interested in getting petted. And I might have to remove you soon, Alice. I forget what I was talking about. I stopped working over a couple of years ago, full-time and even part-time. You know, it's part of my work now is a big part of my work now is being a care partner. Yeah. I think we're a good team.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of communication, which is essential. Yeah. And, you know, patience and whatnot.
Not having him.
Mike, you were previously a social worker.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Was a clinical social workers that did counseling, yeah, for families and couples and individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really love the work.
Has that, you know, that background influenced your support at all?
I mean, yeah, I think it helped. You know, just being a social worker, you know, you certainly build the skills for like trying to meet people where they are and creating more empathy, you know, and that certainly helped. Also, you know, knowing there's resources out there and being able to find resources. So it's come in handy because it's helped us think through, like we've just contracted with the company that does coordination of care, and they don't provide care in the home, but they can help us get what we need at times we need it. So they might find home aides when we need them, and they might find somebody to come in and clean. If the worst were to happen and I died, you know, and Chris is on her own, she's really not. She's got a coordinator who will help her access resources. And I think that for me, I think I know, we clued into that because I know about, I just know the importance of finding resources in the community, you know, and tapping into those. So I'm sure my social work background helped with that kind of decision-making and planning. But I think too, the other way, I think beyond the professional training, I think something, you know, it's changed me. Chris's disease has really opened me up a lot more, really opened my heart and made me much more, I think, a more caring person. And so I love her so much. And, you know, it's made me less focused on what I want to do, you know, because I've been lucky and fortunate to be able to do a lot of the things I've wanted to do in life, and turn more towards Chris. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've heard from several family care partners that, you know, it's obviously a lot of work, but you do spend like just so much quality time in a way that was not previously maybe there. So that's just, yeah, a lot of care partners have cherished that time.
Yeah, so it's kind of ironic, you know, that or paradoxical, that something that is you might see as a misfortune can really become a time to, like you said, to cherish together and really be together and work together and love each other. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
In an ideal world, are there any sorts of, you know, resources? You mentioned that company that helps kind of streamline care, but is there any like types of resources that you wish you could have?
I don't know.
Unlimited funds would be nice.
Yeah.
I think we're very fortunate, and we have resources. You know, we haven't had to kick into it yet, but we've got long-term care policies, and you know, I think we're gonna be okay.
We have family and friends too.
We have family and friends, and we have a lot of support. Yeah.
So 2024 was obviously a big year of advocacy for Cure PSB, and I've heard that you two helped play a part in that. And I want to know, how did you first get involved with advocacy through Cure PSB, and what was that like?
I don't know.
Well, I know. I think I took the lead on that because, and this is part of my social work background too. Mm-hmm. I really liked the fact that Cure PSP was beginning to do some advocacy, you know, to get some public policy and funding in place to address, you know, treatment and help for people with PSP. So it's something I believe in doing. And I was super excited to see that Cure PSP was starting this. And I had no idea. I was so excited to learn there was this bill in Congress, you know, picking up sponsorships called the National Plan and Parkinson's. Well, it's been renamed after, I can't think of her name now, but a congressman.
Yeah.
But the point was to coordinate funding for not only Parkinson's, but a lot of Parkinson's like diseases. And what's wonderful, it's like with PSP, you know, and a lot and other conditions, nobody's heard of them. So finally getting some attention. So I saw on the website or somewhere, or had an email that this was going to be beginning. They were looking for people to advocate. And I just said, yeah, let's do this. So we contacted our local congressperson and got a call. We didn't get the meeting with the congressperson, but we did get time with a staff person, like a phone interview. And really what made such an impact, Chris, was your story. Like mm-hmm. you were just sharing about your life and the condition and, you know, the struggles and about PSP. Of course, this person, I mean, really, really good staff person, but they, like most people, had no idea, you know,
and
was able to funnel that information to Congressman Landsman. You know, within I don't know, a very short time, got an email back. Yep, he's going to sign on to the bill. It's like, oh my gosh!
it was actually pretty easy.
It was, yeah, and then it was easy, and it was, you know, the power of Chris's story, a person who has PSP, getting in front of a staff person, you know, made such a difference. And so there's so much power in that. So I just, you know, I hope, and I'm so glad to see CureSP, you know, creating this program to do advocacy, to continue to push for legislation and funding, you know, what's needed, because I think it's just a matter of getting folks like Chris a little bit of light shining on what's going on. And thank goodness, like there was, I mean, passed, you know, the House and the Senate in the end of 2023, like it was Merry Christmas, you know, how, in such a divided country in Congress, bipartisan, like, you know, I think it was practically a unanimous vote. How often does that happen? Right. So the whole thing was pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing when it passed. I was like, wow, this we got a bipartisan thing passed. This is pretty historic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
But I think it was because it's so compelling, and when you got that information out in front of policymakers and legislators, it was like, of course, we need to be looking at this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I mean, that this people's stories are so impactful and resonant. Why do you think that is, that they seem to have this effect on people? Because that's something that I'm trying to continue to make more popular, just, you know, showing the realities and whatnot.
I think when people can see somebody who actually has the disease, or talk to someone who actually has the disease, I just think it has an impact. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It just does.
It's one thing to hear statistics or hear symptoms, you know, it's another thing to be talking to a human being, you know, a fellow human being who's going through it and hear their story. I think,
yeah,
it's two different experiences.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we all, I believe, and I really experience, most people care about other people. You know, so when you hear about somebody that's having it rough, it kind of affects you. You know, mm-hmm. you kind of pulls at your heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that empathy and that care that I think is just everybody's born.
Yeah. Do you have a message for others who might be considering advocating for a loved one or with PSP or a related disease?
It's really easy.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think it can be intimidating, to call up, you know, a senator's office or a congressman's office, but it's just easy. And anybody can do it. You know, it's really just about making contact and telling your story. And if you believe that it's important, you know, that people know about PSP, or that people, you know, want to get more help for PSP, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be a neurologist. You just talk about what's going on with you. And it's as simple as that. So I would just really, you know, echo what Chris said. It's easy. And I wish more people would do it. I think it's a scary thing to think about and do, but it's actually not. Or it may be, but go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
No, it'll be appreciated, no doubt. And then outside of advocacy, do you have any advice for people that might be, you know, struggling with managing the disease, just getting through the tough days and whatnot?
Stay active. Just do it, even though it's hard. Some days it's really hard to get motivated, but just have to do it. You feel better afterwards.
Yeah, I really admire Chris's commitment to just staying active, you know, scheduling walking dates with her good friend, you know, at the end of the day, even though it'd be easier to sit on the sofa, getting down on the mat and doing her physical therapy, you know, it's just so important. And I think Chris, you do a good job of that.
Yeah, I try.
Keep moving.
Yep. Yeah. Just like Parkinson's, I learned that, and I thought I had Parkinson's. Keep moving. So I've always done that. I was active even before I was diagnosed too. So
yeah, and Chris's neurologist thinks that probably played a part in her progressing more slowly, is that she was so physically fit, even though I know that's not everybody's experience. Some people are really physically fit and, you know, the progression can be rapid. So I don't know, but that's just what our neurologist thinks.
Yep.
I mean, it definitely can't hurt. And yeah, it definitely gives you a better chance, it seems. And I guess just lastly, how do you two like manage to, you know, find hope and find joy in the present moment, in spite of everything that's going on.
We work together really well. We just redid our kitchen. We just remodeled our kitchen. We didn't do it ourselves. We hired someone, but I think that was a example of how we worked really well together. Decided how we were going to do it, what we wanted, and made it happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have each other gives us hope. And, you know, I was really moved. I listened to your first podcast with, you know, the gentleman who had worked on Arrested.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Bob Whitey, yeah.
And his, oh my gosh, it brought me to tears, his statement about, you know, have that one more day, you know, because that's always what people want when someone's gone, is if I just had one more day.
So when Linda was still here, no matter how diminished she became, every day we woke up together was another one more day. It was like wishing you could have one more day and getting it again and again and again.
That just went right into my heart. And I think that's kind of how I live, you know, is like just really appreciating and being in great gratitude, you know, gratitude for what we have and this time we have together. That gives me hope.
Thanks so much to Chris and Mike for sharing their journey. It's an inspiring story of love, resilience, and commitment to that one more day. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Oscar Sullivan. Thanks for listening, and talk to you again soon.